This is Sheila Bender, and you're listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Priscilla Long is a Seattle-based author of poetry, science, creative nonfiction, and fiction, and a teacher of writing. Her first book, Where the Sun Never Shines, A History of America's Bloody Coal Industry, appeared in 1989. Her book, The Portable Writer's Mentor, A Guide to Art, Craft, and the Writing Life, has been a popular and welcome tool for hundreds of writers. It is forthcoming in a new printing from University of Mexico Press. Other forthcoming books include Fire and Stone, Where Do We Come From, What Are We, Where Are We Going, from the University of Georgia Press, and Minding the Muse, A Handbook for Painters, Poets, and Other Creators, from Coffeetown Press. Her latest book is Crossing Over Poems, from the University of New Mexico Press as well. Priscilla's column, Science Frictions, appeared for 92 weeks on the website of the American Scholar from 2011 to 2013. Genome Tome won the 2006 National Magazine Award. She has been a fellow at Hedgebrook, the Malay Colony for the Arts, and Jack Straw Productions, and serves as founding and consulting editor of www.historylink.org, the online encyclopedia of Washington State history. Hi, Priscilla, and welcome to In Conversation.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
I'm glad that you are. I'm very excited to talk about your writing, and it intrigues me that you write in so many genres. I should have said in your bio that the article that was awarded the 2006 award in the National Magazine Article Contest was also one of your science fiction articles as well, right?
No, actually, the science fiction column, which ran for 92 weeks, and it was great fun, and each column was on a different topic, but they were short. And Genome Tome is kind of a long piece. With the science updated, it's going to reappear in Fire and Stone, actually.
Oh, nice.
But no, Genome Tome, I submitted it to the American Scholar, the magazine, and over the transom, I didn't know these people, and it was taken, and it was very exciting to win the National Magazine Award for Feature Writing, and very exciting. We went to New York, and this big black tie event at the Lincoln Center for Jazz, it was all very exciting. And then after that, they asked me to write the science fictions column.
Ah, so one thing led to the next.
One thing leads to another. And the process of crossing genres all the time is really fun, and it really helps. Actually, I think many writers cross genres. For example, a writer of mysteries might write poetry on the side, or like that, on and on. A novelist might write memoir sometimes. So I think it's pretty common, but I have crossed genres since the beginning, and sort of necessity in a way, because I spent many years researching that history book on the history of coal mining, and I didn't want to give up poetry while I was doing that. So right there, I was crossing genres. Actually, it's very useful for a writer to cross genres.
I'm sure, and we'll get back to that, because it's a good thing to talk about, because so many of us think maybe we have to be pegged and put into a special hole of this is where we belong. But what instigated the book about coal mining history?
I became interested in a labor organizer whose name was Mother Jones, and I was going to write a biography of Mother Jones. I didn't know what I was doing, of course. So I started in, and I was a very, very compulsive researcher, and gradually Mother Jones's life, which is a very interesting life, I did not have enough. I mean, there's no material on this labor organizer who organized coal miners. There's no material on her at all before she turned 60. None, except for her few stories, which all contradict each other. So I became more and more interested in her people, and I just got sucked in, and it was a wonderful experience. And during the years that I was researching that, I was working full-time as a printer. So on my weekends and vacations, I would go to different archives in the coal fields and around the country.
It's very exciting that you're not only writing, but printing and traveling to research and take in with a particular figure in history. very rich, and thank you for telling us where it all came from. And then you've moved on from that first book to other nonfiction books. This latest one that will be coming out, Fire and Stone, Where Do We Come From? What Are We? Where Are We Going? Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
That one is, it's part memoir. I mean, it has different chapters that fit together, and there's some science. So Where Do We Come From? Of course, there's my childhood on a dairy farm on the eastern shore of Maryland, but also there's Genome Tome, which is Where Do We All Come From? And then, for example, there's one piece called Interview with a Neanderthal. And so most of us have genetic material from the Neanderthals. So there's a piece that interviews a Neanderthal. I mean, these are the questions I would ask if I had the chance to interview Neanderthal. So there's memoir, and then there's reflections on art, kind of the end. Where do we come from? Where are we going? So the last section has pieces on Hildegard. There's a piece called Me and Mondrian, kind of art as redemption is in summary. And then Going to Portland, meaning Portland, Oregon, is the last piece where I end up in front of a ancient Native American statue that's in the Portland Art Museum and reflect, is what I can do anything compared to this ancient statue? So it's a kind of big, complex book, and I love it.
Well, and so does the University of Georgia Press, which is a very distinguished press. So congratulations.
Thank you.
It seems like all of your genres may have combined in some ways to help you write these essays. And I'm very much looking forward to this book. I might as well say that if people want to learn more about you right now before listening to the rest of our program, well, I'll repeat it again. We are talking to Priscilla Long, and she can be reached online at priscillalong.com and priscillalong.org. You can learn more about her books. I know that your newest book that's already out, not forthcoming, but actually out, is your book of poems, Crossing Over. And I have a feeling, since you told us when you were writing the coal mining history book that you didn't want to give up writing poetry, so you were already crossing genres, the poetry's been with you a long time, and it must feel like quite an achievement to have your book out, and quite emotional, too, given the topics. Would you like to tell us something about it and then maybe read from it?
Yes, of course. So Crossing Over, it starts, actually, with the idea of a physical bridge, crossing over a bridge. In fact, there are numbers of bridge poems in it, and which I might read one. And of course, I live in a city of bridges. Seattle has more than 150 bridges. There are 150 bridges that the city takes care of, and then there are some other bridges that the state takes care of, and so on. So everywhere you look, there's a bridge. And I do love bridges, and the whole thing started with love of bridges and the fact that a beautiful bridge is to me like a poem in concrete and steel or whatever it's made of. And so then there's the metaphorical crossing over, and this book is in part to honor my late sister who died when she was 40. She committed suicide, very, very tragic, and you never really recover in some ways. And so there's the crossing over to the other side that it is about also. And there's also other kinds of crossing over. There's the erotic, which is crossing over, and there are other kinds of crossing overs. Maybe I'll read the first poem that sets it up. Is that okay?
It is, and if you'd like to read another one or two, that's okay too.
Okay, so this is called Sister Ghost. Your beauty stuns, but it's static, photographic. Your stories stir the dust, stick to the broom. Your drawings dream your fine-stitched quilt. Your death, your gift of stones to us. No blame. Suicides are deranged with despair. Oh, Suzanne, were there a bridge back to you, I would take it anywhere.
Beautiful. I'm so sorry that this has happened to her and to you in your life. And I know from reading the poems in the book what work it is to grieve and to come to some meaning and some ability to live with this loss. Would you like to read another poem?
Sure. Yeah, and I think that, in a sense, part of the work of art is to elegize. It doesn't bring the person back. It doesn't actually ease the pain. I mean, that changes over time and so on. But it does remember the beloved. It makes the beloved visible. I mean, they don't just sort of disappear. And it comforts and it expresses something individual, but also really universal, since wherever there's love, there's eventually going to be loss. So next, I think I'll read this bridge poem called Memories Load. And this poem is about the Murray Morgan Bridge in Tacoma. And Murray Morgan was a historian who wrote Skid Road, The History of Seattle. He was a Tacoma guy. He wrote Skid Road while he was working as a night bridge tender on the 11th Street Bridge, which was renamed the Murray Morgan Bridge before he died. So this is called Memories Load. No miracle this vertical lift steel truss bridge, its birds, its timbered deck built to bear a load of workers walking to tide flats, horses, carts, old Tacoma streetcars. Two towers on piers, on piles, pipe water over the lift span, lifting to let pass tugboat, steamship, barge, or bark. And years pass. The truss turns to rust. Struts like old bones carry memories load. Murray Morgan tending the lift motor in the lift house bolted to the lift span, raising and lowering himself, riding Skid Road through ups and downs. Now falcons roost in the old towers. They swoop and dive, defy geometries of rivet and steel.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 Port Townsend. In case you've just joined us, you are listening to In Conversation with Sheila Bender, discussions on writing and the writing life. Sheila is talking with Seattle author and poet Priscilla Long about Crossing Over, her new collection of poems, as well as her past and forthcoming work in creative nonfiction.
How did you learn that Seattle has 150 bridges?
Oh, I think it's on the Seattle Department of Transportation or something, or the, yes, that's where. There's all kinds of information you can kind of poke around on the internet between WashDOT and the Seattle Department of Transportation, other departments of transportation, to find out about bridges.
It's exciting. And I have always thought of Seattle as a city of hills and water, even though I travel over the bridges quite a bit.
And Seattle has so many bridges that I often play the game of looking up and seeing how many bridges I can see at one time.
Wow.
So I've gotten to four. Four is pretty easy, actually. And some are kind of ugly, but but some are quite gorgeous. And they are works of art, so the gorgeous ones. And that's also true across the state, not just Seattle.
And on the cover of your book, Crossing Over, it's a bridge, and it looks to me like it may be the bridge that goes from West Seattle into Seattle.
No.
Oh.
That's actually the 11th Street Bridge, the Murray Morgan Bridge.
Oh, the one you just wrote about.
Yeah, it's taken from a strange view. Usually you're looking at the bridge from the Tacoma side, but this is looking at it from the other side. And the camera is practically down on the roadbed. I love the photograph, and that is a gorgeous photograph by Scott Hingst. He's a Tacoma photographer, and I love that cover.
It's a beautiful book cover, and your poems are beautiful. I'm also interested in how you founded and continue to create for the History Link website.
Well, I wasn't the founder. The co-founders were Walt Crowley, the late Walt Crowley, and Marie McCaffrey and Paul Dorpat, but I was the sort of founding editor. And as senior editor there, I edited something like 6,000 essays. And now I'm like founding and consulting editor, so I have less work to do. But it's a wonderful website if you haven't looked at it, and it keeps growing, and every day we add something. And it has helped me to feel very, very at home here. I'm not native to here. I moved here in 1988, and although my sisters have lived here before then. You know, when you stand on a certain street corner and you know what happened on that street corner 100 years ago, that's pretty neat. And, of course, Port Townsend, you have this lovely old town where history is still very much alive in the built environment there. So I think you all certainly are part of that feeling of our state and how we sort of carry what has come before into the future. It's been a tremendous experience and opportunity in working with writers across the state and working with a team that's kind of history obsessed and extremely knowledgeable has been a great experience.
So tell me, how do writers connect with you? How could somebody possibly become a contributing writer on the topic of Washington State history?
You simply write to the website admin, you know, history.org, and say you want to. And then you start talking. And yes, we do take on new writers from time to time.
That's excellent information. So this is www.historylink.org. I think we should all go and read about our state and also see what we might be able as writers to contribute. Thank you for that information.
Yeah, well, you're welcome.
Tell me what else you'd like to say about poetry. Yours is very musical. I think you might have something to tell us about the music and poetry and how we use that and listen to it.
I think of a poem as almost a form of music, so that until it really starts chiming, I don't consider it to be finished. Hopefully they all show that a little bit, certainly. I'll read one called To Compose a Poem. When I am working on a poem, which I am almost all the time, I'm working on sounds. In other words, a poem is a sound machine. The meanings are important to me also, but the sounds are notes. To me, the words are notes, or the syllables are notes, and so I am also chiming those together. So here's one called To Compose a Poem, kind of an instruction poem. so listen up. To compose a poem. Follow with your fingers the hollows and hills of letters. Follow their curves to their peaks and gurgling wells. Keep your fingers feeling the dips and downs, the hills and dales of the letters themselves. Follow the fat, loop the skin of the letters themselves. Feel how words bump, ding, dip, and bop across the slippery silk. Feel how they rush into whiteness. Dip your fingers into their furrows, into their indigo blood. Feel how they want to whisper the page. Feel them curl to the kiss of the page.
Thank you. I feel like I've been on a walk with you through a magical forest where I'm being instructed to keep going and to look and observe and touch. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
So when you say work on a poem, do some of these sounds come quickly and other ones need you to find them? They're a little hiding.
I usually work quite a bit on the poems. And it's so technically it's a question of assembling diction. Like for the bridge poems, just to take an example, there's a huge lexicon for each bridge, and the lexicon is different for different bridges because of the different engineering techniques and materials and so on that are used for one bridge and not used for another. Different ones are used for the other bridge. So I assemble the lexicon kind of in a separate move from working on the poem, and then I look for kind of deadlines or prosy lines or lines that have kind of conventional received diction is what I call it. And I'm not trying to be decorative or fancy or ornamental, but I'm trying to find language that really sings and that also is really accurate. And so in English, you know, every word has at least three other words you could use instead. And so I do quite a bit of work because when it's done, I want it to be like a little piece of music.
Mm. Can you repeat to us what you called conventional diction, your phrase for it?
What I think of as received conventional diction.
I like that. Received.
Is kind of standard newspaper television language that we hear all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't want in my poems, pretty much. Now, there's a move in poetry of using vernacular language, and so that's fine. So I'm not talking about using big words or Latinate, certainly Latinate words, certainly not, but I use a lot of slant rhymes, like what and white. Instead of white and light would be a perfect rhyme, and then what and white would be a slant rhyme. And echoing sounds within a poem. Let me just see if I can find something. If I can read another,
sure.
Just a short poem about the Cable State Bridge in Tacoma. It's called Queen of the Cut. Night gem, sun brooch, sky jewel, a phantom ship, tall-masted, cable-rigged, Kandinsky bird in blue air, spare, neat as a girl queen above the cut, Tacoma's coral with rust and rotten brick, she reigns, angles of gleams, smoke daughter, penumbra of Mount Tacoma, snow peaks dream her tides, her white piers. She wends her wheel trail through ribbons of light and steel. And so you can probably hear queen, cut, quarrel, rust, rotten, alliteration, rust, rotten, rains, and then angles of gleams, that glah, glah, glah sound. No peak, snow peaks dream. Her tides, her white pier. So white pier, she wends her wheel trail. And that wheel trail is a kenning. It's a combination of, it's an old technique that goes back centuries. It's kind of a metaphorical way of saying road, wheel trail.
Uh-huh.
So I do a lot of that. I work on those sounds, as I imagine, although I don't really know, that a composer works on notes. And at that level, I work on that level of poetry. So, but yet, I don't want to abandon the meaning. I want the meaning to be clear and obvious, but I also want it to be musical. And I think maybe at first hearing, you may like the music, but not really be so aware of it.
I think certainly your description makes us more aware of it, but I think the poems are working and enlivening your subject because of the music. So I think it's good work, well done, that does reach the heart of the listener and the ear, even if they don't exactly know what to call it or why they're attracted to it.
Exactly. You're not supposed to say, oh dear, look what she's doing. That's not the point. The
right.
Point is that on a deep level, it kind of resonates. And part of that is because of the sound work.
Absolutely.
But you don't have to even know that.
Right. And it's a hard thing in our culture because when we think of print and writing and stories, we think visually. And to think with your ears is a whole dimension that can be easily ignored. So thank you for keeping it alive in the poetry. Before we end today, I wanted to be sure to ask you about something you wrote to me, that poetry builds a bridge between science and poetry. How does it do that?
Poetry is a vehicle for any subject matter. And science, for example, in the bridge poems, the engineering, I am very pleased to report, is quite accurate for every bridge. Science describes our world. It's not something that's somewhere else and the property of people who are scientists. Science is everywhere. It describes the world we are in. We look up at the sky, we see Mars, we walk on the ground and we are being affected by gravity. We look at the plants and we look at ourselves and we are seeing the effects of evolution by means of natural selection. And so science is part of our world, so it becomes part of the poetry as well. I mean, there's no separation. It's like poetry is not separate from science, and it's not separate from art either. No, I have poems about art and artists. And so poetry is a wonderful, ample, huge container for life as we experience it, and that includes science.
Priscilla, thank you. That is a wonderful, grand, and accurate statement for us to end our program today. And I just want to repeat, people can learn more about you and your books at www.priscillalong.com and priscillalong.org. And we'll all look forward to your next ones coming out very soon from University of Georgia Press and Coffeetown Press. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You have been listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life with Sheila Bender. For more of Sheila's interviews, please go to Sheila's website, writingitreal.com/audio.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Announcer is Kurt Vanderslice.